second hour of today. I have been joined by the first hour and will continue to be joined by Jane Matt Nair for the rest of the show. But right now, I am very much, well, I am looking forward to this conversation because I think it is going to be both sobering and enlightening. It is, and also sad. But we are joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who is an obstetrician and a gynecologist in the Green Bay area. She's also the District 6 Legislative Chair and McCain Fellow for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And we invited her on today because I'm imagining that your work has gotten a lot harder than the last, has it been 2 weeks now? And so I wanted to bring you on because I know you've had some complicated cases that you personally are already trying to navigate. And in general, across the state, across other states, it's a very difficult, messy time to be practicing women's health. And so we wanted to hear a little bit more about what you can talk about. But welcome and thank you for joining us. Oh, are you still muted? Give us 1 second.
Wait a minute.
There you are.
Am I on? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Woo! All right. I love that you used the word messy because isn't that what Ron Johnson said about women who could go to other states? Like, it's going to be messy, but you know, you can go to other states. If you don't like it, you can move somewhere else.
He did say that because it's so easy to move.
Yeah. You know, the world is so surreal right now and it feels... You are so good at lightening things and making us, bringing us together and making us feel happy, but it almost makes me feel guilty to feel happy when the world is suffering so much and when I'm hearing about so many of my patients and colleagues who are in really difficult situations where they're trying to not only help women find access to safe and legal abortions, but also to manage really complicated pregnancies, often desired pregnancies. So not only are these women and families faced with really challenging health decisions, but now they're faced with stigma and barriers and costs that are completely unnecessary.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I had tweeted that out, my reaction in that I feel like for the almost 50 years of the fight since Roe, what has been precedent, there's such a focus on women who don't want to be pregnant, mm-hmm. without in the anti-choice, anti-abortion rhetoric, and a complete disregard for how much this affects women who want to be pregnant. Mm-hmm. It affects women who want to, them and their partners want to do IVF. It affects people who have atopic pregnancies. It affects people who have, as you had a case that you tweeted out, have their water break at 14 weeks, and there's nothing to do. I mean, you know about this more than I do, that there's the only solution in that situation, if the mother's not going to die, is to have an abortion.
Well, and I think the most important thing that we can do as healthcare providers, because let's face it, abortion is healthcare. So as healthcare providers, when we have a patient who is faced with a complicated situation like this, we don't say, well, here's your only option. We say, here are the risks and benefits. You could continue this pregnancy. That is an option. You can end this pregnancy. That is an option. These are the obstacles that you're facing. And it's different for every individual patient in every individual circumstance. So there is no one-size-fits-all solution. And that is why we need to claim healthcare back, let physicians and nurses and PAs and other healthcare providers be able to take care of our patients and get politicians out of the exam room. Whether we're talking about reproductive care, cancer care, preventive care, I don't care what it is. Just don't stay in your lane, Ron Johnson, please.
Doctor, this has worried me since the leak came out, you know, the draft opinion, since that came out, because there are so many things that are not codified yet. And so the phrase, if the woman's life is in danger, there are no parameters right now as to what that means. So does she have to be 80% near death? Does she have to be 60% near death? Is that enough? Is that close enough to death to give her treatment that's going to save her life? And none of that is written down. So how are you guys all navigating that?
Well, and tell me, Jane, like, where is the monitor that tells me how close she is to death? Because if I know one thing about pregnant women, it's they are young and healthy and resilient until they're not. So it is really hard for us to know exactly how sick they are before they just completely tank. And the thing about this Wisconsin law is that it's an 1849 law. It was written 1 year after Wisconsin was founded and 70 years before women earned the right to vote in this country. This law should not, we don't believe it does apply. But some of the complicated things about it are this. One, no exception for rape. Two, no exception for incest. Three, the only exception is for the life of the mother, but it's really unclear what that means. So no, there's no meter on a woman that tells us where she is at as far as like her resilience. And how many physicians have to agree that she's in danger in order for us to act on her behalf? And if it's more than one physician, how do you find those extra physicians when you're in the North Woods of Wisconsin and maybe you're a family medicine doctor or maybe you're a PA at Whitehall Hospital and you don't have resources and it's the middle of the night, it's hard to get in touch with somebody, but you have to make that life-saving decision. You're stuck in between a rock and a hard place and all you want to do is take care of your patient.
And so you have already had cases where you've had to consult with a lawyer, right? And yeah. So totally insane that you as a doctor who have to make, you know, split second decisions when it comes to your patient now have to, for your own protection, to not be arrested and convicted, have to consult with a lawyer before you deliver care. And so what have lawyers been telling you as we sit in this weird limbo of kind of having this 1849 ban, but knowing that there's a lawsuit pending from Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call, that there's no legislation that have had to even start to undo the messiness. So what is the answer right now legally?
We really don't know.
Right.
So the situation that I tweeted about, because the law is so unclear and it's all just kind of, you know, in the ether right now. So the situation that I tweeted about, luckily we were able to find care for this person in a place where she was able to access it without these barriers. But when I put that tweet out, I actually got a couple tweets or a couple texts from colleagues in other parts of the state saying, our hospital lawyer saw your tweet and they want to be in touch with the lawyer from that facility so that they can see how it's being managed in other facilities. So this is the blind leading the blind. I had a meeting with the Medical Society this morning. ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, which I'm very involved with, is working with the Medical Society to help provide guidelines for emergency medicine colleagues, family medicine colleagues, pediatricians. This affects everyone in the House of Medicine in Wisconsin, across the country, but there are no guidelines and every state is different. So we are just trying to figure this out, work together, just trying to take care of our patients in the best possible way. But man, it is really, really hard right now.
Doctor, I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit. And pregnancy is really one of the most dangerous things that a woman can do physically. There are major risks involved with that. And we're talking about an adult woman. What can pregnancy do to the body of a 10-year-old girl?
Oh, isn't that just an unbelievable case?
I can't even imagine. Granted, they are able to be pregnant, but that doesn't mean that their body is ready for what this is going to do to their body.
Yeah, it's really true. Or a 42-year-old woman, you know, it's a whole different set of risk factors. And I love that you said it. Pregnancy is not joyful for everyone. And in fact, as an obstetrician, every patient that I see, we assess for risks and we try to modulate those risks, whether it's blood pressure problems, very common, diabetes, very common, or as we get closer to the end of the pregnancy, we're looking for other things to evolve, other things that can be obviously fatal, but sometimes just really morbid for the mom or the baby. So pregnancy is complicated and it is much more dangerous to carry a pregnancy than it is to have an abortion.
I saw, and I think it was an obstetrician that tweeted this out, that was, you know, we have this narrative around the womb, a uterus being this very nurturing organ. But in reality, it's made to contain life, because if the growth of cells when it comes to a fetus is analogous to cancer, basically, of how quickly it's growing. And that the reason why ectopic pregnancies are so dangerous is because it feeds off of a fetus embryo, and the way that their cells are developing can cause so much damage if it's anywhere but the uterus. And because of like the actual amount of energy and food and need that it has, and that it's actually the uterus is so much less about it being a nurturing thing versus like almost ready for war in the way that what it takes to actually develop a baby. Because like the trade-off women had to stand up and walk upright is to give up an easy childbirth, right? Like that is because we're bipedal instead of, you know, a chimps and apes and stuff like that. It's like we are in hips narrowed, and it became a lot more dangerous to procreate. And now it's, despite all the advances of modern medicine that we've had to make it less dangerous, seemingly this is a huge setback there.
It's a huge setback. And I love this visual of our uteruses being ready for war. And I want to just keep that in mind as we prepare for November.
You know, I didn't even think about that, but you're totally right.
There's a t-shirt there somewhere.
As goes Wisconsin, our uteruses are marching off to war.
No,
you're right. Ectopic pregnancies, even in the wrong place in the uterus, can be dangerous. If they're implanted in a part of the uterus where it can't expand appropriately, that up in the cornua, that can cause a problem. So any pregnancy in the wrong place is dangerous. And an ectopic pregnancy is the number one cause of death for women in early pregnancy. We have to be able to treat these ectopic pregnancies as emergencies. These women need care.
All right, well, I want to keep you on for one more segment till the bottom of the hour. So when we come back, I'd like to learn a little bit more about potential medical abortion pills and what that could be, because I know a new company just tried to file to be able to deliver those without a prescription. So when we come back, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Because she also has her MPH, so. Those bumper music that he could possibly buy. Bringing us back to As Goes Wisconsin. This is Kristen Bry. I am joined with Jane Manair, and we are joined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who is talking to us about Wisconsin and women's health in this limbo that we are living in. Because right now, at least on the books, there is an 1849 criminal abortion ban, and that makes trying to practice women's health and care for women who are pregnant, and would, even those who would like to stay pregnant, very difficult. And so we were talking about a lot of the health ramifications that you've seen so far, but I know policy-wise, on Friday, it kind of just dropped that President Biden had an executive order out, but what, at least how I read it, I didn't really understand what it actually does. Like, what does that executive order mean for people in Wisconsin right now?
I just hope that Secretary Becerra understands what it means, because he essentially just put it in Secretary Becerra's lap. You need to investigate this, look for this. It's all like kind of fact-finding stuff that, frankly, it's a step, but it's pretty disappointing. You would hope that this would have been done. I mean, this wasn't a surprise, guys. When this was argued initially in October, we all suspected that things were going to turn out this way. And then we got the leak. And now here we are. And it seems like we're unprepared. These are all things that should have been done in advance. So I'll say that I'm disappointed, but it is a step in the right direction. And I did hear this morning that there was talk, and I know that there have been rumblings about a public health emergency. So that could be the next thing that the administration is able to do. My fingers are crossed. Secretary Becerra is married to an OBGYN. He is a bright, inspiring person. So whatever he brings back to the table, I think will be great. I think it's just a little later than I would have expected it to happen.
As far as there's a lot of talk now, doctor, about, and you were able to help your patient receive care in a place where abortion was still available, and now they're talking about preventing women from traveling outside state lines, and I know you're not a legal expert, but I can't imagine that that isn't going to prompt a whole bunch of legal challenges if they try to stop women from crossing state lines to access health care. How would that even work?
Can we just take a step back? They're trying to prevent women from crossing state lines? Like, what is happening in the world right now? And I know I was talking with some folks from Minnesota this morning. The governor there has issued an executive order to protect people who come to Minnesota, because think about where Minnesota is. North Dakota and South Dakota are just to the west. Iowa, who just repealed a constitutional amendment that they made 4 years ago to codify abortion, they just took it away. I guess they figured out they made a mistake or something. And then it's us. So Minnesota is literally surrounded by states that are desperate for access to abortion. I myself am going to be helping out with telemedicine abortions in Minnesota just to absorb some of the volume that's going there. So yeah, I think this is just, it defies understanding. And if nothing else, if women can't, and people who love women and people can't just stand up and say, you're going to prevent us from crossing state lines for any reason? Are you kidding me?
Well, are we going to institute, are we going to have checkpoints? Can you only cross at certain places? Do you have to show papers? Do you have to, how in practical terms is, would something like that even work?
Do you have to pee on a stick before you cross the border?
I mean, how is that, how is the party of limited government, what kind of mental gymnastics do you have to take to say it is okay for us to go through your mail, potentially, if you're going to be ordering medical abortion pills, and it's okay for us to stop and make you potentially pee on a stick before you leave the state, and it's going, we're going to tap into potentially data, like your private data,
right,
that can be sold by these companies and these apps where we sign the terms and agreements that, you know, if you had a fertility app and all of this stuff, but, or your Google searches, right? Your Google search of closest place to get an abortion, right? Like the amount of potential privacy laws, and that we think would protect you from the party that has often said, what is the Reagan line? Shrink government so much you can drown it in the bath.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if anything, so how much does this expand government and the amount of departments that have to get paid in order to track down women?
But they're not the party of small government. They're the party of mental gymnastics. Right?
Yeah.
Well, it's the party of government so small it fits in my uterus. Which is not where I want that to be, but I think that they're actively avoiding that phrase now, that they are the party of small.
Are they?
Because they, I don't know how they can continue to claim that. I really, that's a big jump now.
That's, it is.
That's
you
a
have
big
given
jump.
Me a genius idea, though, a marketing idea for a new IUD that's in the shape of a uterus. So we can talk about the elephant in the womb. Do you like it? There's yes. Something there.
There's a there.
I'm going to work on that.
Quickly, before we have to let you go, what should people know about the state of a medical abortion pill? And that's how safe it is? Can people even get it in Wisconsin? Is this something that you, as a professional, have recommendations for that you can legally talk about? Because I think this was the big thing that's changed since Roe first was decided on 50 years ago, that we have this advent of medical abortion pills. And we don't have a lot of time, so what is your quick synopsis on the state of that option?
Super quick. Medication abortion is different than emergency contraception, by the way. Emergency contraception, or the morning after pill, is contraception. It prevents ovulation and does not cause an abortion. Medication abortion is very safe. It is accessible online from overseas companies. You can have the pills mailed to you and you can self-manage your abortion.
All right. Thank you for that information. Thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find you if they want to keep up with all the work that you're doing?
Kristen for Wisconsin on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Kristen with an I, just like me. K-R-S-T-I-N, the right way to spell it. All right, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kristen Byerly. And keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, ladies.
Bye-bye.
Wisconsin. All right. If anyone out there is listening right now who loves their lawn, who spends thousands of dollars taking care of it, takes great pride in it, judges their neighbors who do not take care of their lawn, I want you to call us and explain it to me. 844-967-2789. If you are a Lawn Wars guy, or girl, I guess. I would love to hear from you because I don't get it. And I feel like I am now, I bring this up because I am now a homeowner.
Congratulations.
At the ripe age of 36, I've finally bought my first home.
Congratulations.
And we don't have much of a lawn. But what my mom realized when she came down to help us pack last week was that there's no spigot outside to attach a hose to.
Okay.
So it seems like even if we wanted to keep said lawn, there's not really a way to water it. So she's big on now doing what is a growing movement of having like a drought-friendly landscape.
Yes.
Instead of a lawn.
Which is a great idea.
Which I think will probably, I mean, it's like kind of further down the list.
Sure.
Like first we have to actually move in to the house.
Right.
And so that might be a next year, because by the time we moved in, like, summer's basically over and the snow is coming and winter is coming and all that stuff. But it made me start thinking, like, oh, like, it's finally for the first time not an apartment. I have things to take care of. But we had past tense, a colleague, maybe multiple colleagues.
We have several. Yeah.
Who take their lawn very seriously.
Oh, my. To, you know, championship green kind of level. And very particular mowing on the angle, you know, which is very specific to some lawn people, because it looks fancier, I guess. My husband and I do have a house and we do have a lawn, but overall lawns are stupid. and here's why. For one thing, I think it was from a French prince. It was like Louis the 14th or something. And Versailles, who was the first one who started this whole, look at my fabulous green lawn. And everyone wanted to become like upper crust and have a lawn. And so it's not a naturally occurring phenomenon.
Well, no, it's the most grown crop in the U.S.
That no one can eat.
That no one can eat. That it's largely just there for aesthetics, despite the fact that it's very hard to grow. And so it is, I've looked some of this up. I was like, all right, how did this become a thing? Because it's now, like, it's kind of a class thing. It's kind of, like, it's kind of a hobby, but it's also wrapped up in a better than thou type thing. And so basically until the mid-19th century, most houses in America were built close to the street, and then they'd have some kind of garden in the back.
Okay.
But if you think about the brownstones in New York, or if you go to Boston, or a lot of like the cities originally did not have these massive lawns. And so the transition to how prevalent every house that was starting to be built was three different things specifically for the American suburbs. First, there was a public park movement. And so a lot of these houses, because there was this movement, it influenced a lot of the first suburban communities
to have more green space. Okay.
Two, which I think is super interesting, is that the adoption of automobiles and train travel, there was pressure on homeowners who would be on the roads or on by the railroad tracks to have their lawn be attractive for people to see it as the pass for the passerbys to appreciate the lawns as you were on the train looking out the window or in your car.
It's my responsibility to have a nice view for people who commute.
Supposedly. So that was number two. And then the second one was after World War II, when the government started financing all these low-cost mortgages in these areas where there was more blue-collar housing going up. It was to emulate, like you said, upper middle class.
The fancy people.
And so it was like you had your house and you had your lawn, and it was that was desirable because rich people have lawns. And so it was those kind of like combination of those three things that we have now. Most, besides you get out of urban centers, most houses, even in Milwaukee, I mean, there's some front lawns.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny to me, and we have no callers so far, so you still have a couple minutes if you want to give us your opinion and defend why having these lawns and putting so much money and care and time and ego into it is totally worth it. We're here to hear your argument.
And we'll be really nice to you. We will. We'll be very nice to you because I think it's a fascinating... I want to know what you get out of it. What does this do for you to know that you're the one on the block that has the nicest lawn? Is there a plaque involved? Is there a reward? Is there some neighborhood recognition, that some secret lawn club that we don't know about, Kristen, because we're not that into our lawns?
Well, there is. I mean, different homeowner associations, like you have to take care of your lawn or you get like a fine. So there is actual like stick.
Sure.
Stick disincentives in certain areas.
If you don't lawn.
I don't think that they have that in the neighborhood I'm moving into.
If you don't lawn properly.
But like, think about No Mow May, right?
Right.
So No Mow May, again, some of our colleagues very, very bothered by this idea of No Mow May, which was in May, I think multiple communities. I think Madison, Milwaukee.
There were certainly some neighborhoods
maybe
in Milwaukee,
Oak Creek,
absolutely.
Madison didn't do it specifically, but Sun Prairie did, and I was the last one on my block to mow my lawn. I waited until the end of May, and every other house like literally gave up beforehand, and they had like little yard signs that you could go and pick up from the Parks and Rec Department, and you could put it in, and it said, "Don't mind my weeds, I'm feeding the bees." And I loved it. So I was like, yes, I'm all in. I bought in. And there was a ton of these other signs, but all those other signs were quitters. And they started mowing on like May 15th or May 20th. And I didn't mow until June.
So did you do it for the bees or did you do it because you're lazy?
Both. Like you, Kristen, I am still in the process of moving in and doing all of the things at my new house. And therefore, if I could put it at the bottom of the priority list, of course mowing the lawn is going to go to the bottom of the priority list. And then the city gave me a nice sign to excuse my...
Because what you're helping the bees!
Say. Yeah, they gave
Get
me
off
the...
Get off my back!
Exactly. And so I had the out. The city gave me cover. I put the lawn sign out there. It's in my yard. It will be out there next May as well. And you can guarantee that until I get my drought-friendly front yard and with a bunch of native plants to also feed the bees... I'm going to not be mowing any time in the month of May.
Maintaining a lawn takes so much water. It requires so much water.
And pesticides.
And pesticides. And if we weren't using the pesticides to keep our lawns so green and weed-free, we wouldn't have to worry about feeding the bees. Because this is part of the whole ecosystem problem. And I want to know, again, I really want to talk to a lawn guy. Do you lay in the middle of your lawn? Do you play in the middle of your lawn? If you have kids and that you know they're going to be outside playing with balls and stuff like that, I can understand that. But for an adult person, what are you doing on your lawn that justifies all of this expense and money? Or maybe I don't want to know what you're doing on
again,
your lawn. It could go either way.
Again, I'm one more time, 844-967-2789. We'd love to hear from you. I mean, and it's interesting because I wonder if my mother's listening at this right now, because she takes very good care of the yard as a whole, right? It is landscaped,
pristine.
And it is, and she gets so much joy out of working in the yard. And it is a combination of the flowers that go together and the shrubs and the time of year. But I will say, because the house we moved into that I grew up in Madison, it was kind of on a hill. And so there was a fair amount of yard when we first moved in the front, but in the back you had to like take it up stairs.
Sure.
And then there was another patchy grass part on the upstart up like the upstairs
upper level
of the backyard. And so progressively from when we moved in when I was a baby to when we moved out when I was 16, every year there was a project to have less and less lawn, which just made my dad so happy.
I bet.
He would brag about how little lawn he actually had to mow because there was enough other landscaping that had been created to get rid of the grass and just have it still look beautiful, which
right.
is largely what this new movement is
yeah.
of a drought-friendly lawn where you can plant succulents and all these different plants that look great but don't require the attention and water and pesticides to be this like single specimen of grass with no weeds. It's like evenly cut to the edges and takes so much attention. And I just, do you think it will catch on in Wisconsin? Or do you think that's a little too hippy dippy liberal for people to be like, no, I want my lawn.
I think there's certainly that faction. But I think for younger generations, and for like you're 36, and for people who are younger, I don't see the same affection for that. You have other things to do.
Oh yeah,
that have more priority. You have bigger priorities.
Like even what we'll do to our tiny lawn will probably be done by my mother if I had to bet.
That's not where your passion is. That's not where, you know. Eventually, all these pro lawn people are going to die. So it might be an age thing. And I do think it is kind of a cultural.
Do you think it's a holdover? So if we're thinking like post-World, so it's a boomer thing.
Yeah,
it's
I do.
In the boomers who, I'm not trying to say that derogatory. You are a boomer.
I'm a boomer.
And so if we line that up with the timeline of post-World War II with all of the homes and the low mortgages and like home ownership rates
yes.
and the GI Bill,
yep.
and that so many people were raised in a house with a lawn, and then as they got older, they desired that.
Yes.
And so now are we in the generation of millennials and Gen Z that's like, I don't care about that.
You're apartment dwellers and condo dwellers and more about downsizing, I think. You're not so much about stuff. At least some of your generation is not so materialistic.
We're not. We have a lot of boxes to move.
Well, stuff accumulates no matter what you do.
But yeah, I don't know. The lawn thing is interesting to me, and it is certainly in the bucket of a category of I want to get it because I try to be open-minded and not judgmental on, you know, don't yuck someone else's yum.
That's fair.
Right?
The one pro-lawn thing I will say is driving a riding lawnmower is really fun.
I've never done that.
I actually had a really, really little one when I had my first house in New Berlin, and there was a small engine shop down the road for me, and I had them detail it and put flames on my little riding lawnmower, and it said danger lady on the back. I got more jollies out of that than it was ridiculous.
Do you have a picture of this somewhere?
I don't. Isn't that sad?
That is a travesty.
I know.
Jane, can I refer to you as danger lady now?
Like, absolutely.
Okay, that is awesome.
Jane's new nickname. Danger Lady Jane.
Here I love
with us today with her. Can we get some magnets to put on the side of your car now that are flames? You just drive around. I'll get you a bumper
on my Subaru.
That's your birthday present.
That would fit in so well
on your Subaru.
On
we're gonna get you magnet flames, and then Danger Lady Jane to
on the
put
back.
On the back.
I love it.
And you're just gonna drive
all
throughout
over
southeastern Wisconsin. And
there's my
like, who's that lady?
There's my new Twitter handle.
I've never ridden
I'm pro riding lawnmower, but maybe just drive it around a track
or
something.
Couldn't you just get an ATV?
Well, yeah, sure, we could do that too.
All right, well, I'm disappointed that no one called us to defend their position on being
like a lawn Jane
owner.
Said the pro lawn crowd, maybe they're dying off. Who knows?
At least they're not listening here.
Not today.
Not yet.
The only pro I have for my lawn is my dog loves it, so there will always be a stretch for him to be able to run and play.
That's critical. Absolutely.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'm not convinced. I'm ready for my mom to come totally re-landscape my lawn for me. If you're here listening to that, Mom, can't wait.
Come on down.
All right. Well, we're almost to the end of the show. And so when we come back, we're going to talk just kind of about radio, since we have a radio legend here.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, when we come back, we'll talk about how it's changed, where it's going, why Jane has decided to work in it for 40 years. And then we'll wrap up the show. All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Minutes is a long.
Get off my lawn.
So that's like the big.
Hi, everyone. My name is Matt McNeil, and I'm looking forward to joining you on weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. starting July 5th on 101 FM The Shaw and WAUK 540 AM. It's 1 hour every day where we'll talk a lot about regional and national politics, but we'll also talk about a lot of non-political things, too. And you're welcome to call into the show at 952-946-6205. For 1 hour each day, let me be your afternoon quickie. It's The Aggressive Progressive, The Matt McNeil Show, 3 p.m. weekday afternoons starting July 5th on 101 FM The Shaw and WAUK 540 AM.
While trying to stay up,
I was tuning in the shot and the light, not dial, doing anything. My radio.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. I have been joined today by Jane McNair.
Thank you so much for having me. It has really been so much fun. And I'm just so grateful for the chance, and I'm so happy for you.
I'm so happy. Yeah, well, I'm happy for you, too, because I'm excited to see what you're going to do next. And I'm obviously of my generation, doing the social media thing hard, which has now led me to radio. Well, it's funny because I had a friend who joked with me once the opportunity, first with WTMJ, obviously now I'm here, but also with Journal Sentinel, and I told him, like, these things have popped up. And he goes, well, you know, what I've always said is that you have a face for print and radio.
That's not true.
I think he was being sarcastic, but it is funny, you know, just for where I started, which was...
Very visible.
Very visible, but also, like, the new, like, what is the new way, right? The new communications of social media and TikTok and video and stuff like that. And to know that that became attractive to translate into a show on the radio, which, granted, is still digital, right? Right now we're on YouTube Live, we're on Facebook Live,
right.
We're on Twitter. But it's interesting to get your thoughts on the lasting impact and future of radio, which you've been working in your entire career.
I have. I'm just not very ambitious, Kristen. No, I started on radio. I wanted to be an actress originally.
Oh, we have that in common.
But my father, who is a mortician and was a very pragmatic man, kind of told me, maybe you should have a backup plan. So I started some broadcasting courses and then ultimately went to a broadcasting school because, from my perspective, radio was theater of the mind. And you just got to have the audience, like reading a book, fill in the details in their head about what you look like and, you know, who is in the studio and all of those things. That I found that very attractive. And then I just stuck with it to a point where now I no longer have any other skill sets. I mean, I type really fast. I have a smart mouth. But as far as the future of radio, without all of these other platforms, I would be really concerned. Without the YouTube Lives and the Facebooks. And because I think your generation and younger don't even listen to the radios in their cars.
I actually am surprised, and this might be a Wisconsin thing, because I that totally would have been my assumption prior to coming back to Wisconsin. Podcasts,
right.
You know, short media, like a podcast for sure. But I would say this happened to me not so long ago, mid-July. I was over at Boone and Crockett in Milwaukee, and all of a sudden I heard two women my age who had just gotten off of a pedal tavern. So they were not totally sober, which I appreciate even more. And they go, Kristen Bry! And I turn around, and then they looked kind of shocked that I responded. And so I walk over because I didn't have my glasses on and I couldn't see first.
Right.
So I was like, do I know these people? So I walk up And they listened to WTMJ, and they were probably late 20s, early 30s.
Really?
And they're like, we listen to you every morning, and we follow you on social, and blah, blah, blah. Like, we think, like, it's so great to have a woman on, like, a woman our age on the radio. And I don't know if it's because they grew up listening to radio, and so that's why I say it may be a Wisconsin thing, but and even more people my age who are like, oh, I heard you on the radio.
Terrestrial radio.
In the car. And I think that there's more people than, you know, I don't know if there's the same, I have to, in our age, if the, I have to listen to the entire show.
Right.
But at least having it on in the car versus if I'm only going to be in the car for 10 minutes, am I really going to turn on my you know, Pills Simmons podcast.
We're going
to save that for when I have like a whole block to listen to the whole thing. And so I do think that there's still a lot of people who listen to radio. I also think, especially in Wisconsin and other rural areas, that's all you have in the car. Because like streaming music from Spotify on your phone when there's no, you know, cellular service is not really an option. So you have the radio stations that come in your area. And granted, in Southeast Wisconsin, that's not as big of a deal, but in a lot of the state, it is.
That's a really good point. I had not thought about that. It was just interesting. Over the weekend, I have a radio in the kitchen that I've had for probably 40 years, and it's just your basic AM, FM radio. It doesn't do anything special. It doesn't even have a clock. It's just an old radio that I have used for decades, and the dial thing is broken now, and I don't even know if I can go and buy an actual terrestrial radio. I didn't look on Amazon.
I bet you could. I think I'll get an alarm clock.
Yeah, if it's a clock radio, but
just a
radio, and I don't even know if they make those. But I am heartened by what you said about still listening in the car and in smaller communities, and that is one of the things that I still think that radio does so well is be local and be in your community and be part of your community. And I think that still sets it apart. And we can be welcomed. Granted, everybody has a, you know, TV app on their phones and stuff, but I still think we can be people with people in their bathrooms and their bedrooms and their kitchens and their basements and outside when they're working. And I think, I hope anyway, that terrestrial radio, traditional radio will continue.
I think it will. I mean, that's obviously where I've put my money, that I'm here, right? It's like, all right, well,
true.
They gave me a show, so but this better work.
But still on all these other platforms, which everyone is going to have to do. You know, the YouTubes and the TikToks and the live streaming and all of that stuff. It's just the changing landscape of media, all kinds of media.
Is that the biggest change you've seen in your decades of doing this? Or what is kind of...
Before they allowed, there used to be a lot more local ownership, and they took away a lot of restrictions, so media outlets were able to buy far more media outlets. So back in the day, if I owned a TV station, I could only own one newspaper and one radio station.
Which is what Journal Communications was.
Was, right? Exactly.
It was TMJ.
Exactly.
The TV station, the radio station.
And the paper.
And the paper.
That changed. And now they could buy however many outlets that they wanted to, which in theory was supposed to lead to a lot more different content, a lot more variation. And that isn't what happened. I think a lot more things became consolidated, a lot more things became, if you owned three radio stations that were all playing classical music, You would get rid of, you know, two of those and only keep one. So it will be interesting to see what happens going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super interesting. I think you're right, and that's not just radio. That's newspapers.
And
how do you create efficiencies in these local markets?
Absolutely.
While still trying to serve a
your
local
community.
Market.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jane, this has been so fun.
It has.
I'm
going
to have you
so
back.
Much. That would be great.
And... funny to talk about, but I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so happy for your friendship.
And yes, am I.
And so this has been As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Come back tomorrow at 12 p.m. when we'll do it all again.
Thank you so much.